11-year MLS pro Quincy Mariquois here, and you're now listening to The Perfect Soccer Podcast, where your host goes one-on-one to get to know your favorite professional soccer players, both on and off the pitch. Because how better to learn what it takes to become a pro soccer player other than directly from pro soccer players? Today's episode is brought to you by PerfectSoccerSkills.com, the number one and only platform you'll ever need to connect with and learn from pro soccer players. Learn more and enter to win weekly soccer prizes, goals, balls, jerseys, player meet and greets, and more by heading over to PerfectSoccerSkills.com/PSTM to enter to win for free today. With that said, please enjoy today's episode.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Perfect Soccer Podcast. Our special guest today is Mike McGee. Mike, how's it going?
Doing good. How are you?
Good. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Chad.
Yeah, so the soccer tournament happened about a month ago now. Tell me a little bit about first how you got involved with it.
First of all, it was incredible. You know what? I think I saw either saw Leko Eskandarian post about it or he messaged me about it. And I think at this point there was basically zero teams in it, but he said it was for $1 million and told me about the golden goal. And I told him that sounds perfect. So I'm in.
That's dope. And then, I know you have your company Sneaky Fox Vodka. So then obviously that's how you came up with the name. But then you created like a new logo for it as well, right?
Yeah. You know, I just threw like some, kind of like some soccer lines on it and then switched it up a little bit and kind of made it look more like a soccer crest, but kept the same, that Fox head logo and tinkered with it a little bit.
Yeah, it was dope. Even the jerseys are really cool too.
Yeah, Jay Demerit was buddies with the boys from O'Neill's and they turned out to be absolute rock stars and everybody loved them. So that was fun.
Yeah. And then tell me like what the process was to, finding all the players.
Yeah, I just started calling my buddies, really. I think Nick Romando was my first phone call. I just thought goalies would be really important, even though I ended up getting hurt. And then we kind of just went from there. Man. So called, obviously called Quincy, called Brad Evans, Ewan Holden, Drew Connor, Martino, obviously a handful of other guys. And just started, hey, do you know anyone? Do you want to play? It kind of came together pretty quick. And I'm not like good at organizing. So I was surprised with how fast it came about.
Yeah. And then as you were one of the coaches, like what was your expectations going into it?
Dude, I had none. I knew some teams had like preseasons. I knew there was a lot of current pros. So to be honest with you, I was like, if we just get one win, like one golden goal win and like just get that footage, even if we lose every other game, like we'll still have that one game and we'll just keep using the footage and, with that sudden death goal. So once we won, the first, whatever, 5 or 6 years in a row, it was all just kind of the house's money. So it far exceeded my expectations and I had no idea what to think until we got there. And they did an incredible job making it look great and the stadium and the fans. And I think it blew away everyone's expectations.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think like even just me from a spectator's point of view, just seeing like the social pages, even like literally going from like 0 to 100 in like one day. And I was like, oh shoot, like everything's going crazy. And then like, it was getting a lot of media coverage, like, you know, like, especially cause like Steve Nash and Chad Ochocinco were playing and stuff like that. So it was bringing in other people from different worlds, not just soccer. So that was cool. Yeah. I think even just seeing your team too, I know they mentioned on the broadcast, they were like, you guys skip practice and we'll go won a trivia contest. So like, that was funny too. I think at the beginning too, like I watched all the games and the commentators kind of like underestimated you guys at first. And then all of a sudden, like after game 2 or 3, they were like, nah, Sneaky Fox is the favorite.
You know, so that's not the team we played in the first game, Zala, was incredible. So they lost in the semis. They were in our group, but they lost in the semis. I think they were lost in the, they were up like 1-0. So technically they should have been in the final. They were our first game. They had like a month long preseason. We had all just kind of gotten there like the day before, 2 days before, and they had set plays and like strategy and coaching and rotations. And we were totally just winging it. We had no clue how we wanted to play. Originally, we were like, all right, let's just sit back and defend. And then quickly, with like 5 minutes left, we realized we had to go man to man. So we were really disorganized, which is mostly my fault. But yeah, we looked really bad the first game, and then once I just said, "Guys, man to man, just be a man," then we started playing really well.
It was an awesome run. I know, unfortunately, you guys lost it was the semifinals or quarterfinals? Semifinals.
We lost in the semis to the eventual champs.
Yeah. So I mean, they always say, I mean, at least you lost to the champs, right?
Yeah, you know what? We were so injured, it wasn't even funny. So we went into the tournament with probably half our team either bailing or getting hurt. So we were kind of just finding guys even 10 days before. And then I demanded so much of like Brad Evans, Quincy, Drew Connor. So like there's like eight guys where I basically played like every minute I could. And then at that game, we were playing two games a day. And then the last game when I needed everyone at their best, guys were just done. Yeah. It was still incredible. I think we only lost like 3-1. That's a current pro team. They had 18 guys subbing every like 30 seconds. I think if we played them maybe our second game or our third game, it's a whole other ball game. I mean, like I said, their current pros are fit and healthy and hungry. But our guys were clever and super high IQs. And if we played them after we understood the tournament but weren't all injured, I like our chances.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like that's why too. It was like I didn't even know. Like I knew some of the rules, and then I saw you guys playing. Now I didn't know you guys were playing two games in a day, and I was like, I watched the first game. I was like, all right, win, cool. And then I was like, all right, they're playing tomorrow. And then I was like, no, they're playing at like 9 p.m. And I was like, oh, this is crazy.
When our games were ending, I think the knockout stage in quarters. We won that game, and it ended at 3, and they're like, all right, you got another game at 7:30 or something. So I was like, what the, like, this, we're too old for this. We then we had to get back to the hotel and like makeshift ice baths, and like guys just handled it incredibly well. You know, for a lot of guys who've probably been spoiled throughout their pro careers, now all of a sudden like eating a cold sandwich and like taking a bus back for 30 minutes and we were intentionally being super late to games. We have like 15-minute warm-up. We were just winging it. So absolutely incredible experience. And the guys that were playing made it all worthwhile. Because if we don't win any of those games or, any of that, I think it's a really long, hard, awkward trip where guys are all mad at each other and probably mad at me for making them go there.
Yeah, for sure. And then, yeah, overall, just like, what was it like for you to like coach a team and just like the experience of the soccer tournament just in general?
It was incredible. It reminded me of like U14 soccer back when like you wanted your teammates to do well and that joy of the golden goal and all these things, right? You turn pro and you start getting paid, and then you don't really want the guy subbing in for you doing better than you, no matter how good of a teammate you were. So, having that pure joy of winning and being a kid, and it was something that I didn't realize was missing in my life. So the tournament definitely was a huge success. I think everyone would agree. And for me personally, I think most of the guys all said the same thing. They're like, I forgot what this feeling was like. And no one's careers end on their own terms anyway. So there's always that little bit. It was Brad Evans who said he had this little bit of resentment, right, towards just the way his career ended. And then afterwards, you kind of know what to do. And now all of a sudden this incredible tournament just kind of reminded you of the joy you had when you were a kid. So I'm not sure if I got that message across properly, but it was surreal and magical and a whole bunch of words I haven't used in a long time.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So you guys run the bag next year?
We are. Yeah, we definitely are. This hopefully will let us stay in it forever. But no, I don't see a year we'd miss this opportunity. It was that special.
Yeah, definitely. And the last thing on that, I think also when you guys played Beasley and Conrad, I was like, yo, this could be like a finals game, because that was like legit, like just all ex-pros. Like,
dude, that was, they had a really good team. I think they kind of had us beat. That was one of the games we were pretty dead. I think we lost like two guys before, and then Brad Evans actually played like 30 seconds. Chris Wingert was an absolute Iron Man, but guys were literally just dead. And I'm like, guys, let's just not get scored on and see what happens. So I think we were down. Yeah, we were down 1-0 at the end of the game, and then came back in the stoppage time, which was incredible. So thank God for those rules. But that was cool. Jimmy Conrad, he's got to be in 40 something. He was fit and incredible. So I'm already trying to get him over to our team next year.
I actually interviewed him like a week before the tournament. And he was telling me that he wasn't playing. And then all of a sudden, like the first game, like I saw him playing, and then, yeah, I saw him like sprinting, and he's like 40, I think he's like 46 or 7. And I was like, what the? I was like, he got the wheels still.
He was playing, and his 1-on-1 defending was insane. He was getting forward. I swear to you, I think he can play pro right now. It was pretty cool to see, actually. When he was playing, put it this way, we had Nick and Quincy up top. I'm like, oh, they're going to destroy this guy. And Jimmy was, nobody was getting by Jimmy. I don't care who was on our team. They were not getting by him. So that was actually fun to watch.
Yeah. Are you planning on playing next year?
You know what? I tried playing this year and I hurt my calf like 3 weeks before. Yeah, I'm trying for sure. So I'm already like half training now and seeing what my body can do. I think that'd be pretty incredible. I would definitely be the last spot. So if we find somebody younger and fitter and better than me, but no, I'd love to play, but I understand there's a certain level of fitness. Otherwise I'm just wasting a spot. So I'm going to see what happens.
Yeah, for sure. And now going into your soccer career, I know you had a really good soccer career. I think you might be the first MVP on our show. So that's dope. So yeah, just give me like a brief, like, you know, how overall like your career was and like the things you accomplished.
Oh man, I had a blast, right? Your dream as a kid is to, you know, be a pro soccer player. So when that came true, the rest was kind of free, but you know, it was definitely a roller coaster. I think I had 8 surgeries on one leg and, you know, a time in my young career where they told me I'd never play again because of one of those. Obviously kept playing, then to get MVP and win 2 MLS Cups, more importantly, was kind of surreal. So I think when my career ended, you know, I just needed a break from the game and it was great. And then maybe 2 or 3 years after my career ended, it all kind of sunk in. Just became incredibly proud, you know, especially watching this league grow and, you know, knowing you played a part in that and you're kind of etched in stone for a while is really, really cool.
Yeah, that 3-year stretch where it was like you won back-to-back cups and then you won the MVP, was that just like crazy?
It was amazing. You know, I won two MLS Cups in a row in LA. Incredible team and just had more fun than you could ever imagine. Then got to come back to my hometown team and play, you know, in front of my friends and family, which, you know, I left home when I was 15, you know, and then I didn't get back there till, you know, 2003. So I was at 30. Maybe 30 or something. And then to go on and win MVP in front of them was hard to describe. It all just felt kind of fake. So, no, like I said, two or three years after I had done playing, it all sunk in and just, you know, I've had a smile on my face ever since.
So the 2013 season, you were traded during the season?
Oh yeah. I think I was saying 2003. I meant 2013. Yeah. So I got traded. I got traded maybe after 10 games or something. The Galaxy was trying to get a player and the Fire were trying to trade for somebody. And I had a really good relationship with Bruce Arena and it was just time for me to get home. So, you know, Bruce didn't want to trade me and I asked to give it a go and, you know, they obliged, which was really cool.
I don't know the stats, but that has to be pretty rare to get traded in the season and win the MVP.
I have no idea. I have no idea. But yeah, like I said, I had a really good relationship with Bruce and the club. They made it very clear they didn't want to trade me, but when I asked, you know, I think at the time I kind of put it in there, they, you know, like I said, we made a really good relationship and they made it happen, which was awesome.
And then, yeah, going into your last year, you got to play, you returned to the Galaxy. So what was that like to go back to the team you won the cups with?
Yeah, you know, I had a really bad injuries. Like I had a lingering hip injury forever. Another knee, and I knew I didn't have much left. I didn't tell that to anyone.
Yeah.
But even after I left the Fire, I was a free agent, could have signed anywhere, you know, could have signed a 2 or 3 year contract, but just told the Galaxy I want to sign a 1 year contract. And always in the back of my head, I knew that was probably going to be it. So, I really wanted to finish there and that was important to me. You know, I love those fans and everything we did there. And, it was just really important for me to get back there.
Yeah. That's dope.
Enjoy learning what it takes to become a better player from professional soccer players? Well, how would you like to work with professional players one-on-one? Now you can with Be Pro by Perfect Soccer. Head over to perfectsoccerskills.com/BEPRO to apply to work with our network of pro players today.
And then going into your post-career, how did you create Sneaky Fox?
You know what? I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do, but I know my favorite things to do in life were, you know, playing soccer. And then, because my career was winding down, it was always fun, you know, beating a team on the road and then we get drinks. So my goal was to, I couldn't play anymore. So the drinking part was still allowed. So I figured I'd try to create like a small batch whiskey or do something. And the vodka thing just kind of took off. So we still making whiskey, but, you know, I think people in Chicago definitely appreciated a kid from Chicago, you know, making vodka in Chicago, and then the vodka is really good. So it just kind of took off and worked. So now we're building a distillery with a street soccer field so I can keep playing soccer and then having a drink after. So it's kind of recreating the best period of my life.
That's awesome. And then how did you come up with the name?
So the first time I ever drank, I was young, probably too young. And all I remember was my dad caught me and called me a sneaky fuck. So fox is just the closest word to fuck. So there's no real connection to fox. It just close enough.
There you go. That's funny. All right. You ready for the five Quincy questions? These are going to make you think a little bit.
Uh-oh. All right.
what's the most important quality or skill that you felt like, made you as successful as a pro player?
I think probably anticipation. I think I had a really high IQ and I wasn't the fastest or I wasn't the fastest or strongest, but I think anticipating plays and keeping my head on a swivel and staying really in tune and more in tune to the guys I'm playing against was huge for me. If I could be somewhere, 2 seconds before them, then I didn't have to be as fast as them.
Definitely. What's the biggest mistake you think pro players are making?
Oh, I got a long list of this. you mean make just in general or in a game? In general or in a game?
It could,
or
it could be on the field.
I just think in general we've become pretty soft. Like the youngsters have become a little soft, and I'd like to see even in youth soccer. I see them all with Instagram accounts and dyed hairs and red shoes, and I think adversity has become more and more difficult for these guys to overcome. And I'm not really sure why. I think just as a culture, we're softening them up. And I wish we'd go back to, toughening them up.
Yeah, no, I definitely feel you. So I actually sponsored a few little league teams, and I went to the game one day, and then the kid asked after the game was like, "Oh, who won?" And he was like, "Oh, it's 5-5. All the games ended in a tie." And I was like, that's not, I'm fine with them getting trophies at the end of the year for participating, whatever, that's whatever, but like,
yeah,
having wins and losses. And the kid he's smart enough to ask that, like,
then that doesn't fly in my house. But I've actually known some pro coaches who let trainings end in ties, and it'll still never make sense to me. I think when you lose, you should punish, and when you win, you should celebrate. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. You learn not to care. And what you just described is probably why a lot of these kids are ending up, not caring if they win or lose, because they were kind of, just born to think that they should do Neymar tricks and juggle and get Instagram likes and all kinds of shit that doesn't matter. So, I got a heavy stance on that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I mean, that's what was really cool about the tournament, that it had to end in a win or loss.
Yeah, and that, especially in those, even if you played good for 40 minutes, when it really mattered, you had to show up and defend and get a goal to win it. It was brilliantly done what they did.
I guess this kind of ties into what we were just talking about. So what advice would you give to a younger player?
There's a million good ones, but I mean, the first one would be just get as many touches as possible all day, every day. Be a good teammate. During games, stay switched on at all times. The ball gets throw-ins, but mostly just you need touches. You need a ton of reps. You gotta play in the street. You gotta play at soccer. You gotta be in every single situation. There's someone that when it happens in the game, you've seen it a million times, and it's just second nature. I think a lot of guys just go to practice and you just don't get enough touches or enough situations to get as good as you want to be.
Yeah, definitely. All right, these last two could be either soccer related or life related. What is something that most people think is true that you believe isn't?
This does sound like a Quincy question. What? Shit. Say that one more time.
Yeah, what is something that most people think is true that you believe isn't? So, like, for example, like for a soccer one, you could, you know, the people say Messi or Ronaldo, or a life one I always bring up is like when Halloween comes around, people always either like love or hate candy corn.
Those are two opposite ends of the spectrum. I don't think I'm smart enough to answer this question. The Messi Ronaldo one, I'll touch on that. For the record, I do think I'd probably go with Messi, but just because everyone goes with Messi, I've played against them both a handful of times. The one argument I always put up is if you switch Messi and Ronaldo's career paths, basically putting Ronaldo only on Barcelona for whatever 15 years and gave Messi, you know, a path where he was in all different countries and, you know, moved to England when he was young and then went to Real Madrid when they weren't very good. I think Ronaldo would be known as the greatest player ever. So I'll agree with him on Messi, but I think Messi had a beautiful, incredible, you know, team and teammates and atmosphere. But so I don't know if that answers your question at all, but that's my Ronaldo Messi debate question.
I'll take it.
All right, good.
What is something you'd move forward with if you weren't scared of what would happen if things didn't go well?
Probably coaching. It's something I know I want to do and have wanted to do. I just haven't really seen too many other guys take a path that they enjoy. And, you know, I'm one of those guys who think life's really short. I've always wanted to get into business. So when I was young and hungry, thought it was a good idea. But I've been nervous to get back in it and start working for people that, you know, I probably know more than the game man and kind of chasing that dream. So I feel like if I could, you know, get this business where I needed to go and then I think it'd be a better time to get into coaching when I'm free and tried it. So yeah, coaching.
Gotcha. Last couple ones, fun questions. What is something that you do in your free time?
All I do is play with my kids, usually soccer. My son's just getting into baseball.
Nice.
That and then, you know, hanging with buddies. I got an incredible group of friends and family, and I think getting dinner with my friends, and if I'm not spending time with my kids, getting dinner with my friends is my favorite thing to do.
Is Chicago the best pizza?
Man, I switched a week ago. I switched a week ago, and I probably shouldn't be saying this out loud, but Chicago has always been the best pizza in the world. And I a couple places in New York, I was there 2 weeks ago, and I think it might have overtaken it, at least for the time being. I mean, Cali and I don't know how to pronounce it, La Industrie, both in Brooklyn, and I think Chicago. Maybe we fell asleep with the tavern pizza. It's still incredible. But I've not had anything like Lucali or Line Street in Brooklyn, New York. So please don't show this in Chicago, but New York has a temporary hold on that.
Well, I'm gonna one up you, and you gotta, whenever, I don't know if you've ever been to Connecticut, but whenever you go to Connecticut, you gotta go to New Haven because we have the best pizza here.
Dude, I watch the Barstool reviews all the time, and that's all he talks about. He said a lot of places that I think are great. He said they aren't good, so I don't completely trust him. But I feel like I do need to book a trip because I'm a huge pizza eater. So I think I do need that trip.
Oh yeah, for sure.
If I go, which places do I have to go to?
I think
so. What are the two best spots?
So it's like Sally's and Modern. They're all Sally's and Pepe's are literally right next to each other.
So I wouldn't go cheese pizza. Is there any like special ingredients you gotta get? Because in Chicago, I always go sausages and jardinera. And it's like there's really nothing like it for me until I just had pepperoni.
The plain, but and then they also have just sauce. But then the one that the Pepe's is famous for is a clam pizza.
Oh, shut up. I could do that. But the pepperoni pizza at Lucali and the burrata pie at La Industrie is like, it's like nothing I've ever had. So I guess the La Industrie one's pretty plain just with that burrata. But yeah, I gotta get to Connecticut. I think that's in my top five trips now. Cause it just seems like for somebody who loves pizza as much as me, I gotta go figure it out for myself.
That's great. I didn't even know that. That's awesome. Last question. Who would you want to do a jersey exchange with, like all time?
So I traded with Messi, which was incredible. So I got that out of the way.
That's sick.
Obviously Pele, but if I get one,
how many jerseys do you have? How many jerseys do you have from like exchange?
Not as many as I would have liked, but I probably maybe 50 to 100. Yeah, maybe 50 to 100. But so I got Messi's, I got Thierry Henry's. I love Zidane. Oh, Maradona! It's Maradona's number one for sure. So if I could go back and trade with anyone, it would be him.
That's dope. All right, Michael, I appreciate you coming on, and could you let the listeners know where to follow you at?
Thanks, Paul. Would you say where to follow me at?
Yeah.
On my Instagram?
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, Paul. It's at McGee18. 18 or 9? Shit. I think it's 18. At McGee18. So appreciate you guys. Tell Quincy I say what's up. It's my guy. And I appreciate you guys as always.
Oh, bonus question. Last one. Do you think he had the goal of the tournament?
Quincy, dude. Oh, his back heel goal. Might have been my favorite. So basically, that was the only game I really was like, we have to win this game. And I think he scored the first, right? Our first goal?
I think
he scored our first or... All right, the goal of the tournament. I think Quincy's goal was there's a couple of goals that they gave it to, but were just like bombs from far out where there's no skill or talent. Quincy's was easily one of the best goals of the tournament, if not the best.
Yeah, I don't know if you know, it got on SportsCenter top, it was the third. It's pretty crazy.
I thought it was second. Are you sure it was third? I thought it was second.
Maybe it was. That's even crazier. That's why it's cool too. Even like for you, like your brand got that out there on ESPN. Like obviously we knew it would probably get picked up, but like to be on SportsCenter and all that, you know, the big shows.
I mean, only Quincy could hold a dude off and score a goal like that. How about his bicycle kick would have been would have gotten, what's it, a Puskas or what's that a word called? Best goal. That was insane. But that was on a real goal. The goals are smaller. So if that was on a real goal, it would have been a goal. So yeah. if his bike goes in, I mean, they're showing that thing for eternity.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, again, I appreciate it. And we'll be looking forward to the next season.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate you.
Quincy Mariquois here, and thanks again for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to share it with someone you feel will get some value from it. And if you could take a moment to leave a review of our podcast wherever you're listening and let us know who you'd like us to interview next, we'll get working on that right away. You can listen to this full episode and more at perfectsoccerskills.com/radio. That's perfectsoccerskills.com/RADIO. You can also enter to win free weekly soccer prizes, goals, balls, jerseys, player meet and greets, and more by heading over to perfectsoccerskills.com/PSTM to enter to win for free today.